Welcome to another Early Years Learning Hub podcast. My name is Jackie Ward and I'm the founder and managing director of the Early Years Learning Hub. This episode is one of our series titled Practice Sharing. And today we are discussing the very important topic of male teachers and educators and their experiences working in early childhood, and probably we'll touch a little bit on schools. And I'm really delighted to be joined by an amazing early childhood teacher and Nick Stevens. Nick, would you like to tell listeners a little bit about yourself and your professional journey?
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on, Jackie. I'm an early childhood teacher. I began my career in 2012 at a centre in Blacktown. We had a service there of about 25 female colleagues and I, so that was a bit of a daunting experience. And I worked there for about 3 years or so. I moved to another centre after that for a year or so, but then I started studying early childhood and primary teaching. After I graduated that, I did a couple of years of primary teaching, which was during COVID, and I hated it. So then moved on, and now I'm back where it all began, at a preschool in Tregear.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like a really interesting journey. And I think I always love to hear people's story, because I notice that, you know, whenever you talk to educators or you follow social media groups, people are interested to know about career trajectories. And I think it's great to, you know, share a little bit about, you know, where you've come from and what's happened with your journey to say, well, that's a possible option if that's the way you want to go. So the first thing I wanted to touch on is like male teacher and educator experience. So what are the numbers of male educators? What are some of the challenges, and what has your experience been like?
Yeah, so we're always told as male educators that it's about 3%. So 3% of the workforce is male. I have no idea if those figures are correct, but that's actually what it feels like.
Yeah, I do think the statistics are around 94% women, but again, maybe there's a lot of male educators in the same place or not necessarily working in the sector, who knows?
Yeah. So it's always, I've always been told it's a very small percent. And when I started my career, that's what it felt like with, you know, 25 females and me. But since joining, I spoke to a lot of friends and even my twin brother, and I had two friends and my brother joined the profession also. So in our little friendship circle, we had the four of us at one stage all in early childhood. So I know that men can definitely have an influence on other men to join their profession. But for men in early childhood, I would say that when they begin, it can be a really daunting and difficult experience, because naturally you look around and think, am I in the right job? With women in the profession, you look around and think, maybe my skills aren't suited to this line of work. But the longer I've been in early childhood, the more I realise that we don't know what makes the perfect early childhood teacher, I don't think. And often it's a big experiment, and I'm learning ways in which men can benefit in the sector in ways that I struggle still. And yeah, to this day, I'm still learning about what are my strengths as a male, and yeah, what are my flaws.
It's interesting that you say this. And again, I always try to be as non-gendered in the world as possible, you know what I mean? Like, so try to avoid things like, you know, boy-girl colours, and, you know, when you stereotype, you do it so often. And so I don't think it's about, for me, it's not about sort of bringing up stereotypes, but I think if you put the shoe on the other foot, so if a woman, and there are lots of women who go into very male-dominated professions, either way, if you're the one that's sort of on your own, or same if you come from, you know, a different cultural background or something compared to everyone else that you work with, you know, when you're the one that's sort of different, it can be a little bit of a challenge, can't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, so I think often we're told too that, you know, males are the perpetrators and females are often the victims. But when you're a single male inside an early childhood centre, you're outnumbered, and you're the one that has that may not have the loudest voice in the room. So it kind of flips society on its head a little bit. For those men, it often can be quite a strange experience.
It does sound like you had a great scenario with lots of peer support as well, because that can be really challenging, can't it? Like, I know that, for example, I've got a group of friends and, you know, there was another friend of ours in that group who was a high school teacher. And whilst my friends, I think, knew that I was a teacher, I wasn't currently teaching, I was in a policy role, but she would be always referred to in the group as a teacher. For a while there, I just was like, I'm a teacher too, you know. I don't think that people always think that in the early childhood space, you know, they don't already always value. So I think that brings me to the similarities and differences. I think as a general rule, whether you're male or female, our profession, our early childhood profession isn't as valued as other sort of teaching stages, primary and secondary or university or whatever. So I guess that's a similarity in a sense. And the fact that, I guess, you know, we are all vulnerable to accusations of child abuse or whatever, you know, because we are, you know, especially primary school teachers on their own with a group of children. So that's a sort of, I think, a professional vulnerability that's hard to deal with. But I think it's also then a lot worse. I know this hasn't been your experience, but have you heard of some stories where people have been sort of made to feel like they're, I don't know, a pedophile automatically because they're a male working in early childhood, you know?
Yeah. So my experience was really positive. And I think for a male, the best you can feel is no different to any of your other colleagues. That tells me that your centre is doing a good job if at no point during the day do you realise that you're a male. Feel like one of the other educators, you know, when I was a trainee, I had my nappy duty and that was the same as my two colleagues, and I would do that just like any other educator. But talking to other males in the profession, that's not always the case. I was speaking to a man earlier this week that is working at a centre and he's not allowed in the bathrooms at a service. So I think that would have really negative consequences on how that male educator feels, and it makes him conscious of being a male, which I think is not a positive thing when you're trying to kind of build a team camaraderie and trying to celebrate differences when you point out a gender and say that gender can't enter the bathroom. I think that can have really,
it's kind of perpetuating that notion that this is an inappropriate person. And, you know, we should call it out to say that it is a sensitive topic. There has been that recent conviction of that person who was a pedophile and, abusing all these children over a long period of time. But I think, you know, we need to acknowledge that pedophiles exist and they work in all different professions, and they are sort of, you know, a group amongst themselves. It doesn't necessarily relate to the fact that everyone who works in, you know, early childhood or primary school teachers are going to be pedophiles, you know, like it's not gender related. It frustrates me a lot.
Yeah, I mentioned that in preparation for this podcast. I mentioned that to my dad, who's a high school teacher, and I said, you know, playing devil's advocate a bit, I said, you know what, Dad, what do you think? Do you think that parents should say that they don't want men changing their child's nappy because of this case with this male educator? And he said, my question is, did that male educator who did those horrific, horrific things, and I've read the case and it is horrific, did he do that, those horrific things, because he was a male, or did he do it because he was a bad person? And I think that's a really good way of framing it, of there are bad people everywhere, and as a profession we need to do a job of making sure we're not hiring those people. But this is not a gender issue. This is an issue of horrible people somehow getting through.
Yeah, the checks. I was surprised that there, you know, that could happen, because for me, I think of there's no way that could happen in a service that I was working at, because there's no way that I wouldn't, again, not overseeing, you know, you as a male or anyone else in particular, but just the fact that you're always sort of supporting each other in a service, aren't you? You know, Nick's in there changing nappies. Is he right? Does he need anything? You know, like, you just know where everyone is. You're supporting each other. You're supervising the children together. And of course, all of the, you know, child safe environment requirements and working with Children Checks, I'm flabbergasted that that could happen in a system that seems so well set up to prevent anyone from being employed that is not, is a bad person, as you say. But well said on that, you know, you're right. One bad person or many bad people do not, should not taint the profession itself or anyone who's working in it, you know, because those people are not great people and they shouldn't have been working there in the first place, should they, you know?
Exactly.
I think one of the things that brought this whole issue to the forefront of my mind is that last year I was supervising some students, and a student was halfway through his prac and he'd chosen some focus children and he had got permission, but from the dad, for this child to be observed. And partway through his prac, the mum said, no, I don't want my child being observed by this student teacher. And I was like, well, why? Because a student teacher, as we know, is not to be left alone with a child anyway. So they're under constant supervision anyway. And number two, could we not also think about what that position that student was put in, because he'd already collected all these observations, and anyone who's out there listening to this who's done any form of prac teaching will be going, oh, that would be a nightmare, wouldn't it? You know, because you'd have to scramble and collect new observations and work forward. So I definitely think that there's, you know, an opportunity, I guess, for us in this podcast to really talk about the benefits of diverse teens. And I guess I'd like to sort of, you know, move on to that. Although I think, what is one of the things, I noticed that in our notes that you talked about how you really, I guess, make an effort to build relationships with families. And I guess that's part of the reason why I can imagine that you're successful in your roles, because that's the core to everyone's success, isn't it? When you build really good relationships with families, everything else works well in your service and in your professional practice. So,
yeah.
Do you want to
talk about that? I think for men, and maybe for me unconsciously, I made a really big effort at the start of my career of building those relationships with parents. I think that what that does is it kind of breaks down those potential barriers parents do have to trust male educators. And male educators may see this as unfair, but I believe they do have to make a little bit more of an effort with those relationships. And and I found, especially with dads, going out there and introducing yourself and being courageous and breaking down those barriers, because unfortunately there are people who have perceptions of men, and it's our job as educators to prove them wrong.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I would also say to you, Nick, and to our listeners, that I really spur leaders on to make sure they're really supporting their staff, all of them, you know, all of their team, for what, in whatever ways they need to be supported. But for male educators to openly have that conversation about, these are the benefits of having a diverse team, you know, it reflects our community, it gives children an opportunity to experience different relationships and all sorts of different things. And that's kind of what I was always cognizant of in my leadership, is trying to making sure that I did try and employ male educators, because I thought they brought something really special and unique to the team. And also for the fact that some of our children don't always grow up with a male figure in their life. They might not see their father very often, or they might not have a relationship at all. So I think that there's, you know, if we have in our early childhood services that connection with a male educator, it can really help.
Yeah, and I think that you're exactly right with the leadership, that this is directors and managers, they need to have a stance on the male issue. They need to have a stance on diversity. And I would love to see more centres being proactive with this and saying that we have males at our service and they do nappies and they do toileting, and not put men in a position where halfway through the year they're getting told that this parent doesn't want you changing their nappy, and centres being reactive to parents who have different stances on male educators. I think if we had more leaders like you, Jackie, that say we support diversity and at this service we have male educators, and if you don't want male educators, go to the many thousands of of services that don't have male educators.
Yeah, I think you raise a really good point. I think we set the expectations, and I don't say this in a rude way. Of course, we want to build relationships with families, but it's about that reciprocity, and it's about us setting the expectations, I think, for families to say, this is what we value here. This is in our philosophy. You know, we have a diverse employment practice. You know, here, this is what we think is important. We talk about that, and we talk about that when families inquire in the first initial thing. You know, this is Nick, and, you know, he works here as part of our positive employment of male educators because we think that's blah, blah, blah. So I think, you know, if you're upfront with people in whatever you do, I've had another guest on a podcast where she talks about taking children out on excursions. And if that's just the forefront of what your conversation with families is, we value whatever that is, then it's automatically going to be not a problem for those families because they've had that expectation from the leaders from word go, haven't they? There's been conversations about it and making it a priority.
Yeah, and it's funny that other forms of diversity would never, or maybe they are questioned, but we would have a whole totally different reaction to a parent saying, I don't want my child cared for by an Indian worker or a African worker. We would respond to that with a firm no, that we have educators of all different backgrounds. But when, from what I can hear from services, when it's a male issue and it's my child won't be changed by a male educator, services kind of bend and move and get a little bit uncomfortable about that. But yeah, I would challenge services to have the same response to that to look at it as sexism and as discrimination, that no, this educator is a male and we support men in the industry and deal with the consequences of that parent leaving or changing their mind.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I guess brings us to that kind of last point on our list here about standing together as a united workforce. And I think one of the things that we've just always got to have each other's back, don't we? You know, there's lots of, we're vulnerable to a lot of different things, I think. We're vulnerable to families wanting for us to do things, you know, in ways, for example, push down curriculum when they want us to teach their children to ride or whatever, learn maths or whatever the story is. There's always times where we're being asked to do things that don't align with our code of ethics, with our professional standards, with our learning frameworks and all those sorts of things. So I think it's about saying, well, okay, what do we think is important in, you know, not just in our service, but in our whole profession? For me, I think it's really important that we do have some great male educators. You know, like, I really enjoy working with different people who bring different ideas, who bring different worldviews, because I think it really enriches my practice and children's experience. I think it's a great thing that you're doing, and a great thing that, you know, again, that you seem like you're very supported in your family, with your family, with friends, all those sorts of things. I think that makes a difference. So, you know, I guess I'm hoping that anyone who listens to our podcast today and our chat, Nick, if, you know, they are thinking about joining the teaching profession or becoming an educator, that they share this podcast with their friends and family so they can get an idea that it's not an oddity. It's not a weird thing if you want to work with young children, you know.
Yeah. And I would encourage too that if there are men who are listening to this podcast or educators that know men in the profession, we have a Facebook page. A man named Ramesh has made a Facebook page for men in the industry, and it's called Thriving Educators Aspiring Male Professionals. So it's TEAM on Facebook, and that group is aiming to support male educators in the profession who are having issues or even just want to feel a sense of camaraderie with other men. And then for women, I'd just want to say that the impact that positive affirmations had on me when I was starting in the industry has kept me here for 13 years. I remember a colleague, Ruth, telling me, Nick, you'll be a great dad one day. And that compliment has fueled me for 13 years. So for those female educators listening now, if you work with a male colleague, Your words really hold power. So, yeah, those are a few ways that we can support these men.
That's amazing. It's just been amazing chatting to you, Nick, and I really appreciate your time. And I love to hear you're having a really great experience. It's been really nice for me to hear, I guess. Is there anything else that you would like to share or talk about?
Maybe just like to shout out my preschool now, Tregear Presbyterian Preschool. They're an amazing preschool, and where I've got another male colleague there. And if you want to know an example of men working well together, feel free to visit, and we'll let you in, and you can have a look at me and Uncle Ted playing every morning.
That sounds amazing. I'll take you up on that one day. I'll just have to figure out time when I can be there. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Nick. I really appreciate your time. And for all our listeners, you've been listening to another episode of the Early Years Learning Hub podcast. And tune in and sign up to hear more of our episodes to come.
Thanks, Jackie.